Good morning, the time is 9:03, and I will call this meeting of the Texas Commission on Fire Protection to order. It's great to see such a goodly number of people in the room. Thank you for braving the cold weather elements to be here with us today. Hopefully today will be worth your while for making the trip and the time. We'll get right into our agenda with aisle number one.
Call to order with an invocation and pledge of allegiance.
So for our invocation today, I'm going to ask Randy McGregor from Teaks to step to the podium. Would you please stand? Oh, I'm sorry. Before we do the invocation, go ahead, Randy. Everybody can stand. No commissioner or staff member of the agency or any other person in attendance at this meeting shall be required to participate in any invocation, and such decisions shall have no impact on the ability of the individual to participate in the agency's business. If anyone wishes to exit the room during the invocation, please do so. Please feel free to re-enter after the invocation.
If you will, please bow your heads with me. Heavenly Father, we thank you for the blessings of this day. Lord, we ask that you provide your wisdom and guidance over the business to be conducted here today. I ask, Lord, that you keep a protective hand on all of our first responders, Lord. Bless them, Lord. Keep them safe. Lord, as our business is conducted here today, I ask, too, Lord, that we have safe travels home for everyone. All these things we ask in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Randy.
Please join me as we pay the respects to the flag of our country.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And now the flag of our state.
Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to the Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you. Please be seated. 57 years.
57?
No, seven years. Finally, I think I've got that one around. All right, we'll move on to aisle number two.
Roll call for a quorum and to excuse commissioner absences, if any. Commissioner Cantu.
Here.
Commissioner Coatney.
Present.
Commissioner Vandegrift.
Here.
Commissioner Glenn.
Here.
Commissioner Hamilton.
Here.
Commissioner Morgan is here. Commissioner Smith.
Here.
Commissioner Frieda.
Here.
Commissioner Buford.
Here.
Commissioner Johnson is absent today. I'm sorry, Chairman Steelman.
Here.
Commissioner DeVillis.
Sue DeVille here. Yeah. Okay.
Commissioner Wade.
Present.
That is it, sir.
Commissioners, I'd like to ask for a motion to excuse Commissioner Johnson. He did let us know well in advance he wasn't going to be able to be here today.
So moved.
I have a motion by Commissioner Glenn, second by Commissioner Coatney. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Item three.
Approved commission meeting minutes for the November 21st, 2024 meeting.
All right. Commissioners, you've had opportunity, hopefully, to look over our meeting from November the 21st, the minutes from that. And if there's not any questions or exceptions or changes, I will entertain a motion.
So moved.
Got a motion by Commissioner Coatney, second by Commissioner Hamilton. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Is there any opposed? That motion passes. Item four.
Report from the Budget and Strategic Plan Ad Hoc Subcommittee. As the chair of that subcommittee, I don't have anything to report. I don't know if staff wants to address anything, though.
No, only the what we provided in the notebook, just so you can see the numbers.
Sure.
Okay. We will move on to item number five.
Reports from fire service interest groups and agencies on matters relating to their specific organization and purposes, functions, activities, and objectives, including reports from TEKS, the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, the Texas State Association of Firefighters, the State Firefighters and Fire Marshals Association of Texas, the Texas Fire Marshals Association, the Texas Association of Fire Educators, the Texas A&M Forest Service, the National Fire Protection Association, the Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, the Center for Public Safety Excellence, the State Fire Marshal's Office, the National Firefighters Foundation, and the Firefighter Cancer Support Network.
Okay. First up, we will hear from TEKS.
Good morning, Commissioners and staff. Chris Anger, Division Director with the Texas A&M Engineering Extension Service. Just got a few things to report this morning. Currently, we're preparing for spring school, and if any of your folks are involved, we appreciate that. But we're sitting right now at about 315 participants, and with guest instructors and other folks that are helping to support the school, we're a little bit over 400 right now. We had a successful leadership development symposium, and there's a lot of folks that are in this room right now that were participants in that, and I appreciate that. Probably one of the most well-attended leadership development symposiums that we've had to date. Also, during that time, we did the Texas Fire Service Hall of Honor inductee awards for the Lifetime Achievement Awards, and we had four new inductees this year. Dr. G. Kimball Bennett, who was director at Teaks for a number of years and started things with Texas A&M Task Force 1 and with Disaster City, received one of those awards. Helen B. Johnson, a retired executive a director with SFFMA and Texas Firefighter Pensions, was one of those inductees this year. Stuart Grant, who is with Grapevine Fire Department and also associated with the Dallas Fire Rescue Department, was one of those inductees. And Willie Wisco received that award posthumously this year. Former fire chief at Galveston Fire, and had, when we started looking at his accomplishments for the things that he did while working for FEMA and other organizations along those lines and with other associations, that was duly noted. Also, if at this time we're taking nominations for next year's inductee ceremony, and if you'll go to, and I'm going to take my glasses off so I can actually read it, txhallofhonor.org, and it's all together, no dots in there, just txhallofhonor.org. That's where you can go to nominate someone for that prestigious award, and we're taking those nominations right now, and that will happen up until about the 1st of August. Is that right, Paul? Just want to make sure that I'm telling you correctly on that. This weekend, Texas A&M Task Force 1 is doing an operational readiness exercise out in Disaster City, and so a lot of activities associated with that. We have a task force coming out of Utah to participate with them on that. We have many updates that we're doing out at Brayton Fire Training Field right now. We've got a five-story burn tower that we're in the process of completing right now. That'll be completed close to the end of March. And then we just started the process on a new swift water training prop. Hopefully we'll have that in operation sometime this next year. With that, I'm open for your questions.
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, next up is Texas Fire Chiefs Association.
I might be able to represent them.
Come on.
Good morning, I'm Doug Booker with Fulshear Fire Department. I'm the Secretary for the Texas Fire Chiefs Association. We continue our education programming pretty heavy this year. We just launched the Fire Chiefs Academy, which was interesting. I think in the first 5 minutes there was 25 applicants. In the first day there was 130 applicants. So that one is filled up, and we continue that. We're working on a company officer academy that will supplement, which will give a company officer to a battalion chief all the way up to a chief fire officer certification program. We're led this year by Joel Baker, the fire chief in Austin, and our next convention is in Waco in April, which we anticipate very high attendance. Any questions for the Fire Chiefs Association? Very good. Thank you,
Chief Booker. All right, next up is the Texas State Association of Firefighters.
No report, sir.
All right. We'll move on to the State Firefighters and Fire Marshals Association of Texas. All right, seeing no movement, we will move to the Texas Fire Marshals Association.
Good morning. Ryan Smith, Second Vice President, Texas Fire Marshals Association. Just a few quick updates. We have our spring meeting coming up in March. 17th will be in San Marcos at the Embassy Suites. We have a call for presentations. I know some of y'all have put some stuff in or recommended some people to do some teaching during our program and sessions. It's now live on the website, tfma.org. It will be open now until March 4th, so it'll close March 4th. We'll start reviewing those as the e-board to get presentations put together. The 2025 annual conference is set for October 27th through 31st, again in San Marcos at the Embassy Suites, and that registration will open sometime in May. That's in the report.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next up is the Texas Association of Fire Educators.
Good morning. Jason Jackson on behalf of the Texas Association of Fire Educators. Earlier this month, we held our annual conference in Corpus Christi, Texas. Great attendance, great turnout, a lot of familiar faces and a lot of new faces, which is great to see folks advancing their careers and wanting to get in the training field of the fire service. Several things at our conference. Some of our key topics that we covered in our conference this year were mental health and wellness, as we've spoken about that here before, and some other updates, and then also some instructional techniques and leadership. We also had a great opportunity to meet with some stakeholders. Mike and his staff came out and did a great presentation on what's going on here with the commission, some things that we're doing great as training officers and instructors here in the Texas Fire Service, and some areas we need to improve on. Also, it's always great to have staff come with him so we can put some faces to some names and voices that we hear on the other end of the phone calls when we call here to Austin. So it was good to network with those folks. A couple other things during our conference this year is we did our annual awards. We gave out two awards this year. Instructor of the Year Award recipient was Rusty Downs with Teaks, and Training Officer of the Year Award recipient was Randy Touch with the Lee City Fire Department. Both of those gentlemen have been doing great things, not only in their organizations, but across the state of Texas. It was good to recognize them for their hard work and efforts that they do for the Texas Fire Service. Also, in our business meeting this year, we had a little bit of a leadership change on our executive board. Jason Schaefer, who's with Freeport Fire Department, is now our secretary for our association. And then last year at the 2024 conference, I announced to the association that I was going to step down as president. I've been a longtime board member, been the president for several years now, and thought it was a good time to step away. We were doing great things. It's time to hand over the reins to someone else and let them pick up the ball and run with it. So I'd like to introduce you to the new president of the Texas Association of Fire Educators, Roland Arnold, with Marble Falls Fire Department. He's already hit the ground running in the last few weeks, doing some transition work with him, and he's got a great vision and some great opportunities that are going to come forward with the association to benefit the Texas Fire Service. With that, any questions or comments you have?
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you, Jason. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We'll move on to the Texas Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts. Oh, I did. I'll come back to the Forest Service, my bad. No, come on, Clay. Come on, I already got you up.
Good morning. Clay Avery, Executive Director of SAFE-D, the State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts. We're the State Association for Emergency Services Districts, or ESDs. 2 weeks ago, we had our conference, record attendance, 1,300 registered attendees over that, record number of vendors, a couple presentation highlights. Cliff Grant, Rick, Justin, and Tim made a great presentation about the commission and the great work that's happening here, trying to talk through the life cycle of an ESD as some of these departments start to become more, or start to become commission regulated. I think there's a lot more discussion and dialogue that can happen there, but this was a great and well-received presentation. We also had a responding to the interface presentation. Commissioner Glenn attended that. That's one that we're going to probably want to keep having. But we actually had that presentation because I sat through the presentation that was at this meeting in November, or maybe the prior meeting. But that was a really good presentation. I said our ESD folks need to hear about this, and we were able to have Captain Davidson do that presentation at our conference. Turning the page, we're looking towards the legislative session. Basically, everything that we're trying to do boils down to two things: making sure Texans can get the emergency services that they need and deserve, and ensuring that ESDs have preserve the ability to get those resources to our first responders so they can provide those emergency services. And everything falls under those categories. So we've got a busy couple of months ahead of us down there at the Capitol. But otherwise, I will open to your questions.
Commissioners, any questions for SAFE-D? Clay, thank you. All right, we will back up to Texas A&M Forest Service. I know I believe Chief Witzko is going to give this report.
Yeah, Commissioners, Chief Jared Carnes reached out early this morning. He had a sick child, asked me if I'd give his report, so I'll do that here. Since January the 1st, Forest Service has responded to 56 fires for a little over 6,000 acres. They've also mobilized more than 500 personnel and 130 engines for winter weather across the state of Texas. In addition, in January, they mobilized 115 personnel and 25 engines to support the state of California in the Pacific Palisades fire. Over the next 3 months, I expect an increase in fire activity due to the current weather and the forecast weather over the next few months, higher winds, lower humidities, all the things we see every year in Texas, and so it's here. They will be pre-positioning resources, and they have 16 aircraft on standby for the next few months. The last note was that they recently acquired a new division chief of planning and preparedness, Chief Kyle Mills, retired out of the Frisco Fire Department and accepted a job with the Forest Service. That's the end of the report. I don't wear green pants. I won't take any questions because I don't have any answers for them.
All right. All right. Thank you for sharing that information, Chief Wisco. All right. We will move on from that to the Center for Public Safety Excellence.
Mr. Chen. Good morning. My name is Leonard Chan, the current chair for the Texas Center for Public Safety Excellence Consortium. The CPSC Consortium strives to develop a collaborative relationship among fire departments across the state, especially through the CPSC's agency accreditation professional credentialing programs. Registration for the upcoming conference in Orlando starting on April 1st is now open. The accreditation hearings are concurrent with the conference with Southlake and Shepherd Air Force Base, which fire departments do stand in front of the commission. CPSC launched a Fire and Emergency Services Analyst credential at the end of last year, and I was the 14th out of 15 individuals who obtained the status. The new edition of accreditation criteria have been released, which will be effective for departments aiming for accreditation status starting in the spring 2027 cycle. I can take any questions.
Commissioners, any questions for CPSC?
Thank you, Lou.
Next up is the State Fire Marshal's Office.
Commissioners, I'm Chuck Allen, the Assistant State Fire Marshal. Just a few things going on in our office across the state. One of the biggest things, House Bill 2467 was filed, which will bring hopefully our peace officers within our fire investigators or licensed investigators up to the same pay scale as other state law enforcement officers. So, Andy Deaver's office is the one that's offered that bill, so we'll be watching that move through. We've partnered with TCFP, Texas Fire Chiefs Association, National Fallen Firefighters Association, and Texas LODD to host a one-day LODD conference, which is April the 14th, which will be the day before the Texas Fire Chiefs Association conference starts in Waco. I believe that registration is live currently, so if anybody is interested in doing that, we just decided to do one day now to see how it progresses, and we have a big interest and we may expand it to more than one day in the coming years. We keep continuing to educate fire departments to just notify us when they have critical injuries so we can go ahead and just get a report started. That way, if that firefighter succumbs to their injuries months, years later, we have some sort of documentation to rely on, because a lot of times we've seen that firefighter will end up succumbing to those injuries years later, and they're trying to find the witnesses or those that were involved. They may have already retired or moved on, or they may have passed away. So trying to get on the front side of things versus the back side. There's also a first responder health and wellness symposium, which will be held in Pflugerville September the 26th to the 28th. That Friday night will be geared towards leadership, chief officers, on the importance of health and wellness. And then that Saturday and Sunday will be breakout sessions, and one of those big breakout sessions will be geared towards wildland firefighters, health and mental wellness. We're rolling out our Fire Marshal Discussion Series. Will be March 5th in Sulphur Springs. June 11th will be in the Dallas area, waiting on that organization up there to get us a location. We're still looking for somebody in the central southeast Texas area to host us in September, and December 17th we'll be all the way out in West Texas at El Paso. Right now we'll have representatives from TCFP, TFO. This will be the first time we've got HHS to the table with boarding homes and daycares and foster homes to answer any questions that fire marshals or attendees have. We've invited the Railroad Commission, the Forest Service will be there, along with other state partners. We have a new ISO PPC oversight officer for those of you just going through a survey. You can get in contact with me and we'll get you with Todd Josie. And also our engineer oversees that aspect right now. NERS, everybody hates it from what we hear, but all NIMPRS is going away, as everybody's aware. All your 2024 incidents need to be uploaded to NIMPRS by April the 1st of 2025. And then all your 2025 incidents that need to be uploaded into NIMPRS by January the 31st of 2026. If you need help in getting onboarded, let me know and we can get you in contact with Cecilia and our other TechSpurs person to help facilitate that process. And lastly, one of the things that is new to us, we just rolled it and went live with it last week, is the reporting of suicides. Nobody in Texas is tracking suicides amongst the fire service. I was up in Washington, D.C. last week for the Congressional Fire Institute Symposium and visiting with Wendy Norris. She didn't know of anybody across the nation that's tracking suicides amongst firefighters. So you can go to our website. There's a hyperlink to report a suicide within your department. All we're looking for is a name, agency contact, and any information that you can provide related to that suicide. We're being told that depending on the time frame, if a firefighter had a traumatic event at work, that it could be related and got back to the line of duty death. So that's the end of reporting. Questions?
Commissioners, any questions for State Fire Marshal's Office? Thank you, Chuck.
Thank y'all.
We'll move on to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Yes, sir. I'm now sitting on that board representing General President Ed Kelly at the IFF. And so a couple of weeks ago, I traveled to Baltimore for my first board meeting on February 11th. One of the discussions was just talking about a couple of budgetary concerns and some decreases in revenue. So one of the things that we're going to be looking at is what programs do we provide compared to what the statutory requirements from the from Congress are. So in fact, I was just looking, we're going to have a budget discussion here in March about that in a couple of weeks. The Memorial Weekend is going to be May 3rd and 4th. May 3rd, that Saturday, will be the candlelight vigil in the evening, and then May 4th, that Sunday morning, will be the annual Fallen Firefighters Memorial. That's what I have for you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any questions? All right. And lastly is the Firefighter Cancer Support Network.
Commissioners, I will handle that report. Curtis Dunn is the Texas state rep for the network, and he is in Florida today for a cancer conference out there. He's reported that in the last quarter in Texas alone, they distributed more than 20 toolboxes. So these are new firefighters who have been recently diagnosed with cancer. They've also brought on 18 new mentors. These are firefighters who have had cancer, and now they're helping support and mentor those who have been diagnosed. He's presented 12 classes recently for cancer prevention and awareness. They've attended several conferences where they've maintained a booth, TAFE, also the San Antone Fire Health and Safety Weekend. They'll be at the Texas Fire Chiefs Conference coming up in April. They made two presentations, one to the Sunshine Rotary Club, and they also received a check, a donation of $500. They made another presentation to the Tarrant County Fire Marshals Association, who donated $5,000 to the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. Curtis also traveled to Manchester, New Hampshire for a train-the-trainer class. He wants me to emphasize, and I can tell you that Texas has had a huge impact on these cancer awareness training. We made it a rule here, mandated it in 2 years, everybody got it done. Other states are picking up on that now and trying to capitalize on the same thing. So he wanted me to reinforce that. They pushed out the new white paper, Doing It Right. 10 years ago, they did the first one. The new one came out at the end of 2024, and it's available on the website. And they are looking for a location, a large venue here in Texas, for free skin cancer screenings. So if anybody's interested in that, you can reach out to Curtis or myself. The last thing I need to report is that I attended my first in-person board meeting for the Cancer Support Network at the end of January. And by the end of that meeting, I had been elected as the chairman of the board. So it's a non-paying gig, and I didn't have enough to do. So
I always thought it was if you missed the meeting.
Yeah, that's what I thought, and that's why I was there.
It's been a paradigm shift.
Anyway, so honored to represent the state of Texas on this board and this important cause, and looking forward to the work that we can do across the world.
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you for that report. NFPA report. You have that?
Yeah, so I'm not Orlando, and I don't work for NFPA, but I sit on the NFPA committees that we follow.
Okay, I apologize. I was told he wasn't going to be here, so I scratched through that one. So, Jim, we'd love to hear about NFPA.
My voice carries.
It does.
We just don't want to record it.
That's okay. Anyway, so my name is Jim Reedy, and I sit on the NFPA 1970 and 1850 committees for the Texas State Association of Firefighters. I just came to update you on the current standard that's in effect, some of the changes, the significant changes, and then to give you a little update on 1850, which we follow 1851. One of the problems going forward is they've combined four standards into one standard, and we're going to talk about that later on. But as I give it to you today, it's 1971. It's the one we follow for structural firefighting gear. So.
Ooh,
maybe a problem. So this is 1970-71. It's already in effect. We're going to talk about that later on. But a change is adding the RET test into the certification standards. 1970 or 71 has to do with the certification, construction and certification standards before the gear actually hits the field. So we're adding a test in, our RET test, that's been on the books and in process for, I don't know, 8 years maybe. But it's finally been perfected, and it evaluates wet or evaporative heat better than the THL test we have now. It simulates what you actually feel on the fire ground inside your gear, rather than it's just a dry test and a wet test. This is another part of the test that will give us better numbers for heat stress. Hoods, we all know that the particulate blocking hoods in certification will be mandatory. The minimum standards are set that were pretty much the same as we started out with. Started out with as an option, and the firefighters on the group in the committee really thought that it should be mandatory. Now, probably 75% of the hoods in the country that are worn are particulate blocking hoods. So the fire service has accepted it, and the generation that we have now is pretty good and almost back to the two-layer hood thickness and comfortability. So gloves are an issue. And for the reason you wouldn't think, but the sizing. Sizing's always been an issue. We've tried to use sizing, the original sizing from just glove manufacturers. Then we went to military sizing that didn't work. And so now we're back to a more diverse system of sizing so that we can include the females in the service and the people on the top end and the bottom end as far as physical structure and size. But committees are now really paying attention to our females and trying to make sure that they're included in the process, but also that we cover them, because we want everybody to be safe on the fire ground, not just the regular people in the middle. So we've changed the light degradation test or the UV test. Anybody that's been on the job for a while and leaves their gear sitting out in the bay next to the truck in the door sees eventually how it discolors and wears. UV degradation is an actual thing, and it weakens the gear, and a lot of times you don't find it until you get on the fire ground and it tears, or it tears it and just crinkles up in the bay. So what we've done is we've changed from just an individual test for the moisture barrier. Now the whole three layers is going to be tested for UV, just like it sits in the bay, like it hangs on the side of the fire truck, or wherever it sits, like in the cab. So there's that. And then we're also now in the standard will be the a testing to evaluate before it even gets to the field how it will react to different types of washing. So we're going to wash it and evaluate how that affects all the materials in all three layers before it gets to the field and then comes back to the service provider and gets cleaned. So just to give us a heads up on any issues before it even hits the field. 1850 now is 1851 and 1852. 1852 is the selection, care, and maintenance for SCBAs, but 1851 is selection, care, and maintenance for garments. We just finished that standard. It just went to ballot, and it just went to ballot and passed, but now we're waiting to see if anybody wants to make, what's lack of a better term, a protest. My thought is probably that it's going to be not in the spring of next year or this year, which it should be. It'll probably be in August sometime is when it'll get finalized and published. So the key changes in the next 1851 standard, which affects us too, is we're going to have a PPE technician, basically a person that's in charge of gear, oversees the cleaning, oversees the care and maintenance of it, the whole thing. So rather than just the guy with the lowest seniority getting stuck with that, there's going to actually be a technician in some fashion that will have knowledge about how what to do and how to do it so it doesn't damage the gear. He'll be overseeing inspection, repairs, and advanced cleaning. And so even if you contract that out, you'll still have somebody that's responsible to make sure that the place you contracted out to is doing it correctly. So that's new in here. So it's a PPC technician and a PPC manager. We're going to evaluate the cleaning process and all garment materials now. And when you send it out, or they call it verification. So now your cleaner, it has to get verified according to the standards that are set up so that, one, the gear gets clean, two, it doesn't get damaged, and three, it's healthy for you when they send it back. Well, so for years and years and years, it's been set at the 50% level. You got to get at least 50% of a listing of contaminants out of the gear so that it's deemed clean. Well, it's only 50% clean sometimes. The firefighters on the committee have been pushing for a 70% cleaning efficiency to start out and hopefully to get 100% eventually. So 1851 is probably not going to come out to August because there's testing going on to, I guess, improve that process, for lack of a better term. But the upside to 1851 is now every cleaner, verified or not, is going to have their numbers, their cleaning efficiency numbers, published on a UL website. So whoever you take it to get it cleaned, they're going to have to publish on the UL website, or it's going to be published, their numbers, their cleaning efficiency numbers. So if they clean pyrene at 30% and they clean something up at 70%, you'll be able to see not the average of the two, but you'll be able to see each individual number, how it cleans. It's significant because it'll push the cleaners to improve their systems in some fashion. The firefighters also want to take and have the whole garment cleaned and tested rather than just the shell. So any kind of efficiency numbers that are generated right now are done just on the outside. And the moisture barrier, we know, traps a lot of contaminants. So now going forward, we're pushing for the whole entire garment to be tested, and efficiency for the whole garment, not just the outside of it. So, and that's about it. So the short version of 1851 is probably, I would guess, probably next August. So any questions? Sorry, that was just an update. But
yeah, no, appreciate you bringing that. Commissioners, any questions? Jim, thank you. Okay, we will move on to item number six.
Discussion and possible action on report from the Health and Wellness Committee.
All right, good morning again. Doug Bucker with Fulshire Fire. I sit as the chairperson on the Health and Wellness Committee. We did meet on January 16th as Director Wisco was saving California. Cliff Grant stepped into his role and helped us with that meeting. Our committee is full with the addition of Michael Anderson, as you approved last quarter, and he joined us in that meeting. We set an action plan
to address a few things, and we affirmed our mission statement, which I wanted to share. The mission of the committee is to provide factual data and practical guidance regarding key areas of health and wellness, to educate, inform, and facilitate the development of action guides for individuals and departments. And in keeping with that mission, we picked a few areas to get to work on. And so Homer Salinas from Mission has taken on the cancer awareness, and his approach to the cancer awareness is to see how effective we're currently being. There's a litany of different resources that are available to the Texas Fire Service. And so he's putting together a survey, both at department and individual level, to see what adoptions have been made and what compliance there is. And that'll help us focus in on our course of action on that. I've overtaken a cardiac health initiative, which this committee had previously worked in conjunction with Best EMS in the Dallas Metroplex area. They're the EMS provider for a few departments in that area. We're going to renew that research that they've done and work on messaging for that. Chris Call from Portland Fire has taken over the fitness training aspect in practical fitness programming for firefighters at both on-duty and off-duty settings. Ashley Watson has taken on, this is a new topic for us that we have not previously looked at, looking at hormone replacement. She has an extensive history in education and looking at those, and I think that will be unique for the Fire Commission, for the Texas Fire Service, that I don't know of anybody else actually looking at that specific to firefighters. Adam Story with Cedar Park has taken on the injury report, and that's not to take away from Grace's work on that. She's the quality of the injury report is phenomenal. We think that maybe we can turn that into a quarterly approach instead of an annual review of the injury report, to try and give it out in metered doses to the Texas Fire Service, where it makes it's more impactful. Chief Muir from Houston Fire is addressing the mental health component. He has done some work in his master's program on that and seem like a good fit. And then O'Neill and Green have teamed up to take on another new topic for us, circadian cycles and sleep cycles. As more than ever, departments under pressure to look at unique scheduling, we wanted to make sure that we're making it quite apparent what the effect of different schedules have on people's sleep and how that sleep affects overall health and wellness. So our next meeting is April 24th, and we have an action plan that each person that's on the committee has taken on a project is to bring back their plan of attack, the steps involved, the timeline and benchmarks, the platform for distribution, and then finally defining what success looks like, so we'll know whether we're being effective or we're not. We have future programs that we don't have the lifting capacity for currently, but we'll be looking at SISM, Health and Wealthy. I'm sorry, that would be nice to be able to address wealth as well, but the Health and Safety Officer Program, the FIDO Injury Report, like a how-to guide on FIDO compliance and data entry, and then working in correlation studies with the United States Fire Administrators Summit outlines. And of note, just for your information, the first thing the Texas Fire Service will see from us is Homer Salinas' survey that we'll be routing out to see where we are currently. That's the end of the committee report. I can answer any questions you might have or take any orders you might have for us.
Commissioners, anything for Chief Boker and Health and Wellness?
I do.
Commissioner
Friedrich. Ashley Watson, where is that person from?
Euless.
Euless? Thank you.
Commissioners, any other questions? Okay, Chief Oakley, thank you for that report.
Thank you.
Commissioner, staff has asked that we insert a quick break here before we get into item 7, so I'm going to recommend we take about a 15-minute break, stretch your legs, use the restroom. The time is 9:42. We'll just say we'll start back at 10 a.m. Please turn off your microphone. The time is 10 o'clock. The Texas Commission on Fire Protection meeting is back in order. And we left off at item number 7.
Matters referred to the commission from the curriculum and testing committee, including A, possible replacement of the curriculum and testing committee member, and B, discussion on curriculum updates for hazmat, including necessary corrections.
Commissioners, I'd ask for the purpose of this agenda item that we do 7B first. So, Pat, we'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pat McCall of Collin College, and the chairman of the Curriculum and Testing Committee. In your package, you have the curriculum for the chapters related to hazardous materials awareness, operations, technician, and incident commander. Included in that information are some minor changes that were made to the curriculum, particularly the reference as we changed from 472, it's now 470. So we found where that hadn't occurred in previous, so we made those slight changes. I just want to assure you there is no change in the actual content or any of the curriculum list. It's more just those small minor references. So it's a little bit of a cleanup. So that's really all we've got on the HAZMAT curriculum. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Commissioners, any questions?
Mike, is this a, this says discussion, but is this an actionable item?
You guys just need to approve
the changes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, commissioners, you've heard the material from Pat. Are there no other questions? I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
I have a motion by Commissioner Coveney, second by Commissioner Wade. With any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Motion passes. Okay, 7A. Commissioners, before we get into 7A, I would like to request that we go into a closed session. To do that, I'm going to implement the process to make legal counsel happy. So it is 10:02 a.m. on February 20th, 2025. At this time, the commission will go into closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 551.074 to discuss personnel matters under agenda item number 7. The commission requests that all non-commissioned members leave the room except for legal counsel, Mike Wisco, and Yazzie Chavez. Commissioners, please turn off your microphone.
It's been a lot great.
Okay. And so 3 months of year.
All right, Commissioner's microphone's back on. It is 10:35 a.m. on February the 20th, 2025, and the commission is now in open session. No action was taken in closed session. When we left off, we were at item 7A.
Commissioners, within the last couple of weeks, I received a verbal resignation of a curriculum and testing committee member, Martin Davila, who's having some personal issues and asked to resign from the committee. So I bring that to you today for some direction on how you want me to proceed with filling it. I know we have an eligibility list, but I think you guys need to make the decision on what you want to do there.
Commissioners, thoughts or discussion?
I would recommend that we fill out off the current eligibility list. Chief Wisco, do you have the next name, or would you just go down the list based on who accepts it?
I do. We have the list in the internal policy. I'll start with the next one, which is let me get to the page.
And we also want to accept the resignation of the commission of the committee members.
The first one is John Tanner Morgan, so I'll reach out, see if he's still interested and able to do it. If he is, we'll insert him into the committee, and I'll make you all aware that he accepted it. If he says he can't, do you want me just to continue down the list until I find one of these people on the list that can't?
Okay, most appropriate.
So I make a motion first to accept the resignation, and then second to move forward with placement from the person on the standing list.
Okay. I'll second that.
Commissioners, we have a motion by Commissioner Coveney, second by Commissioner DeVils, that we accept the resignation and proceed down the existing list to find a replacement for curriculum and testing. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Is there any other topics or items that we would like to discuss related to this issue?
Mr. Chairman, I have one to address the question that came up yesterday regarding this two-year standing list and the unintended consequences of it.
So y'all are going to have to be patient as I read this. This was in email form sent today, but it's relatively lengthy. So there are two motions related to this. The first, I make a motion to change the two-year TCFP commissioners adopted policy, IP-004, on committee appointments to be reduced to a one-year committee list. There are four components to that. We need to A, change the 120-day rule to state solicitation for applications to fill committee vacancies will occur every year during the third quarter, July to September, and shall be posted to the TCFP website for a period of no less than 30 days and no more than 60 days. Applications must be received by the end of the third quarter of each year. B, applications will be reviewed by the ad hoc committee on committees during the fourth quarter of each calendar year, October to December, and applicants will be reviewed and ranked to establish a standing list. C, the applicants will be notified of their selection status and the list will be published on the TCFP website before the end of each calendar year with an effective date of January 1st of each year. D, the list of applicants will remain valid for one calendar year beginning January 1st and ending on December 31st. That's the first motion. Essentially what we're going to do is establish a period every year for people to apply for any vacancies that come up on committees the following year after that. So the people that were adversely impacted who were on a 26 list, the three that were adversely impacted on a 26 list, will no longer be impacted because of the next motion I'm going to make. But they will have to reapply for their positions. Nobody will be automatically selected. We've already established a process of transparency and selecting it to include even the chairs of two of our committees had to reapply for their positions. Motion two. I make a motion to direct the TCFP staff to notify all applicants on the current eligibility list for selection to committees of the above policy changes. Essentially, the people who are on the two-year list will be notified that their period of time will expire at the end of 2025, and if they have not been appointed to a committee during that time, then they'll have to reapply in the third quarter of this calendar year for 26 appointments for consideration. And B, I recommend that TCFP staff notify all active committee members whose terms will be expiring in the next calendar year of the ability to apply for consideration to be reappointed to a committee, and that they will be required to fill out an application for review and consideration for selection in accordance with the listed policy.
Okay. Commissioners, thoughts, discussion, comments on either of those motions?
I second the motion.
So I'm taking it these are two separate motions, Commissioner Coatney?
They're two separate motions.
So I have a motion number one by Commissioner Coatney.
Second.
A second by Commissioner Wade. Is there any other discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Motion one passes. All right. Motion two. You've essentially already read it and made the motion, right?
Right.
Which is your motion. So I have a motion by Commissioner Coatney.
Second
by Commissioner Smith. Is there any other discussion on the second motion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Commissioners, thank you for your discussion on that and in the workshop yesterday.
Chair, can I?
Commissioner Coatney.
So I just want to apologize to any harm that may have caused people in the 2026 year. We didn't think about the process and the extension and the impact of it. That's why you weren't notified of it. We didn't see that far forward in this. That was my decision to bring it forward to the ad hoc committee to be placed on a two-year standing list. We've rescinded that. It won't have any adverse on anybody going forward. So thank you very much for bringing that forward to our attention.
Thank you. Okay. We will move on to item number eight.
Discussion and possible action on report from the Firefighter Advisory Committee. A, Rule Review 37 TAC Chapter 423 Fire Suppression. I don't think you've got the time.
Sure. Chief Deere.
Good morning, Commissioners. We reviewed this at the Firefighter Advisory Committee and we ultimately tabled it. We are on page 96 of your workbook, but if I could take you to page 97 real quick, where it talks about 423.1. Minimum standards for structure, fire protection personnel. There was lengthy discussion at the advisory committee on the EMS component requirements, which are down there under number 3A through E, which I'll quickly just say here. It says, successfully complete a commission-recognized emergency medical training program. The commission recognizes the following emergency medical training. Many of those A through E don't exist any longer, and during the conversation we had before we finally tabled it, this is a rule review, once again, that you all sent to us. We're discussing at length now about the wording in here for what EMS training should be, look like in 2025, because this reads the same as it did in 1979. So we're trying to see if the fire service has evolved in some form or fashion and what would be the best wording on it. I know we have latitude on each of the three committees to put an ad hoc committee together, but this is going to be the first time we're doing it from the advisory committee. And as I understand it, I have the latitude to make that committee whatever it looks like, because it's only going to be a very temporary committee. And I'd like to use this platform here with the open meeting to share that information with y'all. And anybody that's listening or here in the room, if anybody wants to weigh in on this aspect of this rule review, if you would make yourself known in the next 2 weeks where we could start taking some of that information. So I would ask anybody to contact anybody that's on the advisory committee. Certainly you're welcome to reach out to me via text, email, cell phone, whatever works best. But we would like to get some input to make sure we get this right as we move forward and it's current with 2025 expectations of our communities and what we're doing in the fire service. So ultimately, we tabled it, so I'm not bringing anything to you today asking for action. I'll answer any questions, though, any of you may have on that.
Commissioners, any questions for Chief DeGear on 423? Sure you will get a lot of input on that.
Well, we'd like to, and it's very possible we leave the wording as it is, but I just think it does read very antiquated, and there's a lot of concerns that came up, everything from IFSAC to...
I've been approached by several chiefs throughout the years in my service to the commission at different capacities about the need to update this, so I'm glad you guys are bringing that forward.
Okay. Well, we'll take any advice or input from y'all as well. If you hear from anybody, please throw them our way, and we'll put that ad hoc committee together. We'd like to have representation of all the thought processes that could impact this.
Okay. Nothing on that? Nothing else on that?
Okay. So we're going to have a motion to table 8A.
Okay. So you guys have already tabled
it. We did table it at our committee.
So okay. And makes you feel better if we table it also?
Yes.
Okay.
Just for the purposes of...
Gotcha. Let's keep the lawyer happy.
So we'll make a point of reference. Go ahead. If the commissioners table it, the committee has to stop working on it. Right now, it's in the committee's hands. He's just updating them all while he's not bringing back proposed changes to this.
Okay. I'm just addressing what the commission has to deal with.
Okay.
You're not going to be making any decision on 8A as of today.
Okay. Just making sure we're clear on that. I don't want to freeze it so they can't continue.
Right. And there is some question about this ad hoc committee. I assume that they have the power to... put together an ad hoc committee to discuss all this.
463.1B. Commission has established a firefighter advisory committee, curriculum and testing committee, health and wellness committee, and compliance. Texas Government Code 2110.008. Duration of advisory committees. These committees will continue for 4 years from the date of creation, may be continued following a vote of the commission to extend. The commission may create short-term ad hoc working groups for special purposes in accordance with this rule. Committee's purpose, eligibility determines meeting procedure identified in this rule. So the allowance is there for the committees to function with ad hocs, much like curriculum and testing is doing right now.
The commission can direct them to put together an ad hoc committee to address this and then come back at a later commission meeting to...
Well, 463.3 under general, G, the committee chairperson may form an ad hoc working group when, in the judgment of the chair, it will enhance or provide guidance for a specific purpose or time period. The committee chairperson may determine working group selection, but membership is limited only to ad hoc and will disband once the purpose has been met. So it gives the
It gives the power.
So as long as he's presented that to us and we're good with that, he can move forward, correct?
That's correct.
So by taking no action, then we're leaving him to move forward, correct? Okay. Everybody good?
Yes. That's why I brought it up. This is the first time we're exercising this role.
Okay. So everybody's good with 8A. So we will take no action and move on to item 8B.
Rule review of 37 CAC Chapter 425, Fire Service Instructors.
So, Commissioners, we're now on page 110 of your workbook. In 425, we also, as we reviewed this rule, we tabled it as well because we believe there's a lot of ramifications from 423 that could impact this. So, and there was a couple of clarifications we were looking for on the IFSAC impact for the instructors. So we really have no action that we're asking from you at this time. We've tabled that rule review, and we did not discuss using an ad hoc committee for that. If the committee just wanted a little bit more time to see how 423 played out.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions on 8B? Seeing none, there will be no action, and we will move on to item 9.
Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 435, Firefighter Safety, regarding the new NFPA 1970 standards.
All right, Commissioners, at the last meeting we talked about 435 and the rule in whole is in your notebook this morning. The issue again is that NFPA has produced one of their new revised and condensed standards, 1970, which encompasses PPE and SCBA. By rule 435.7, you are allowed to establish an implementation date for which commission staff will start enforcing the new NFPA standards. So in a nutshell, we're looking for guidance from you today for that implementation. As a point of discussion, I want to point out that the NFPA in 1970 spelled out that for the protective clothing changes they recommended, they're allowing manufacturers 12 months to be prepared for that. Again, it might not take them 12 months, but they have 12 months to get their manufacturing process up to speed for the changes. At the same time, in the same document, they allow the SCBA manufacturers 18 months to make the necessary changes before they start producing the new SCBAs. It goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, the manufacturers control the timeline here. By rule of 435.7, you all have to establish an implementation date when our compliance staff will start enforcing the new standards. So we just need a little clarification and guidance for you when you want us to start enforcing that.
Okay. Commissioners, questions, comments?
If the manufacturers control the date, it'd be silly to put a date that's sooner than that, right? So
I think by law, the way 419 is written, you guys have to, the commission, the agency as a whole, has to enforce the newest standard. By rule, you have the flexibility of setting a one-year date. So unless you take action today to say what day you want us to start enforcing the new standard, it's in effect right now. And right now, it's not practical because nobody can, the manufacturers aren't ready for it. They still have a 4 to 6 week lead time for the gear. The SCBA folks are still a long way from being ready. But if there's no action by you all today on an implementation date, compliance is going to start enforcing it today. That will be a train wreck that none of us will survive.
The room will be full next time.
Mike, what was the exact date for when that NFPA standard went into?
So 1970 was released in September. So the effective date really would be September of 25, September of this year, with the caveat that they gave the SCBA manufacturers an additional 6 months. That would push the SCBA piece of this to March of 26. But we have to have some clear direction from you all when you want us to start enforcing that with all of that in mind. Or else we go out and start enforcing it today.
Are you saying, Mike, that we can set the date 1 year from today? Or do we have to backdate it back to September?
I think we would be safest to stay in line with the NFPA recommendations. I think it's 365 days from when the new standards released. That was September.
Okay.
I will, as much as I might regret this, we've got an expert in the room who spoke earlier, Jim Reedy, who sits on one of these committees, could probably clarify
this. He's teed up, ready to go.
I expected that, so I'm grateful.
Commissioners, Jim Reedy for the Texas State Association of Firefighters. So the real problem is not bunker gear, it's SCBA. Because of the certification process, they're literally having trouble getting PACs certified in a timely manner. That's why they gave them 18 months instead of the regular 12 months. Bunker gear right now, helmets, boots, gloves, they're already ready to go. The 4 to 6 week lead time for stock gear, that's actually pretty normal, to be honest with you. And then if you want the bells and whistles and all the additions and all the custom cuts and everything like that, well, then that's when it goes farther. And by the way, I don't work for any of these people, so that's not the issue is SCBA. And the problem for us is that because now the way the statute reads, these are all combined together rather than before they were all separate. Now they're separate chapters. And so that's been the issue. We're in the process of trying to solve this, maybe with some language to give the commission some easier enforcement, broader enforcement powers, so that if people can't get up to speed in a certain period of time, the commission can consider extenuating circumstances and you know, work with them. We basically, the commission, as long as I've been involved, is trying to work with people to help them solve their problems. We may violate them or fine them or whatever, find them, but ultimately, we're trying to get everybody up to speed with what we believe is the right thing to do. So, I think that the concentration on SCBA would probably be prudent as far as 18 months. Bunker gear, though, it's ostensibly it's all ready to go. So it's already been certified since it was the implementation or the publishing date was last year. People were ready to go last year. So. And the hood thing is the really the only big thing in that in the bunker gear standard that will change because it's just mandatory. And like I was telling you, most everybody's using them already anyway. So hope that didn't muddy it up too much. So.
Commissioners, any questions for Jim? Commissioner Hamilton.
Well, would we put two dates for two different things in two different chapters? In other words, we would put a date from the date of 1970 chapter whatever for gear at this date and then 1970 chapter for SCBA at that date.
If it's legal, I would think that would be probably a pretty good alternative, yeah.
So whatever those are, I mean, if it's ready to go now, we could still go with the recommendation from NFPA.
So September 25 for apparel and March 26 for SCBA, would that work?
Staff would like that. It gives us some.
Unless notified by the manufacturer that they're not going to make that deadline or whatever.
Right. Yeah. I think those dates are acceptable.
So right now, just as a clarification point, fire departments are in gear that's already certified to the current standard. So it's really more about SCBA. And the other two, they're in a pass and uniforms. And don't ask me why station uniform. I have no idea why uniforms are in there. But it's the SCBA side that's the problem. So, and based on the consortium meeting yesterday, we're working on a little language also to help the commission have that little broader power, I guess. Would that be right, Mike?
Yeah, we're control. We're not. Yeah, we're trying to work out some flexibility in the law. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. So, Chief Wisco, I'll ask a question on the time frames, September and I believe March. Is that the beginning of the month, end of the month? We need to drill it down and be that specific for the.
I think we just go with the beginning of those 2 months, the beginning of September and the beginning of March.
And that will be conducive to help staff and not paint them into a corner.
That's right. And while Jim is absolutely right, and the manufacturers, again, they control this, they're already making the PPE to the new standard. I think. Back to an earlier conversation, the transparency, giving everybody an opportunity. Some departments might not know it. If you implement it retroactively or immediately, they may feel like they didn't have enough notice. So by allowing the 365-day or September implementation, that's a little more palatable for everybody involved.
Yeah.
We do hear a lot of that.
Okay. Commissioners, any other questions or discussion? Anyone like to make a motion?
I make a motion to, I guess, and help me with the wording here, to adopt the NFPA 1970 with an effective date of September 2025, with the chapter on SCBA to be implemented in March of 2026.
Is that the beginning of the month? So September 1, 2025?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
And then March 1st, 2026.
Yes.
I second.
Okay. I have a motion by Commissioner Wade, second by Commissioner Copeland. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Item 10.
Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 403, criminal convictions and eligibility for certification.
Commissioner, 403 was in front of you last time. Staff had requested some more time just to be able to review, make sure there were no grammatical changes needed. We didn't find any, so the document in front of you is ready to be adopted if you so choose.
So moved.
Second.
All right, I'm sorry, I have a motion by Commissioner Vandegrift, second by Commissioner Glenn on item number 10. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Motion passes. Item 11.
Discussion and possible action regarding proposed amendments to 37 TAC Chapter 421, standards for certification.
Commissioners, 421 was in front of you last time. There have been some grammatical changes made. As you look through there, primarily, again, we are going to capitalize the word commission and remove where it's not capitalized. And that is the bulk of the changes. Unless you all may have found anything else that needs to be corrected.
Okay. Under, real quick, under fire service instructor one personnel, that's 13. Under qualifications, I think there's a one C that may have been missed out of all of the. So fire service instructor.
A C that was one. Missed by our grammatical.
With the scholar. Qualifications.
Yes, qualifications in addition to successfully completing a commission's approved.
13A, you said?
Yeah. Yes, sir. I'm sorry, I don't
page
have
137, I think. Got underlined just
I did not line. Use ChatGPT to find that.
I knew somebody was going to have to. I knew somebody was going to have to pick this up after Rusty Wilson left the board. He was the grammatical king, you know.
That's probably my one and only time.
I'll there's another one up there too, but I failed to mention it. It has a Q in front of the word in front of commission.
Where's that?
Okay. Commissioners, any other discussion or questions? Right. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
So motion by Commissioner Wade.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Smith. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Item 12.
Proposed rule review for the following: A, 37 TAC Chapter 427 Training Facility Certification, and B, 37 TAC Chapter 429 Fire Inspector and Plan Exam.
Commissioners, these are the next two rules in line for the mandatory four-year review.
Okay. Commissioners, discussion. How would you like to proceed?
Move we send these to advisory for review.
Second.
Okay. I have a motion by Commissioner Smith, second by Commissioner Cotton, that we send both items 12A and B to firefighter advisory. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? The motion passes. All right, we'll move to item 13.
Matters from the agency chief, including A, update regarding agency duties and responsibilities, B, decision of the agency chief in contested cases and consent orders, C, status regarding division functions, including 1, training approval and testing for test-administered training approvals, record reviews, and online training audits, 2, certification and professional development, including training applications, IFSAC seals issued, certifications issued, training facilities, curriculum development, library resource requests, 3, compliance, including biennial inspections, compliance officers training, issues involving regulated entities, and finally, 4, information technology, including public website design, farm and phyto improvements, CAPS, IT security policy, and service requests.
Commissioners, for A, a couple things to catch up on. Based on the presentation in November by the IFF regarding responding to the interface, myself, along with the Chief of the Forest Service, Jared Carnes, traveled to New Orleans to their conference they had out there. They did some more presentation on that, and we sat down and had some meetings with the leadership of the IFF regarding an initiative here in Texas. They were completely supportive of it, and they've embraced the idea of Texas hopefully reaching the point where we mandate this training, recognizing there's a few things that have to happen beforehand. The first, as we discussed, was getting enough trainers in Texas to be able to teach 38,000 firefighters. Based on the direction of those discussions in New Orleans last month, I came back and submitted a supplemental LAR request for $400,000 to hopefully have the state fund eight train the trainer classes. Those train the trainer classes are about $50,000 apiece. They can have up to 24 students in them. So if the state funds this by the end of 2026, is that right? By the end of the next biennium, we could have 200 instructors across the state, which would put us in a good position at that time to come back with some kind of concept or recommendation to require the training, much as we've done with Courage to Be Safe and cancer awareness and other things like that. So we're slow rolling this, but it's certainly necessary. I think from the presentation and all the discussion we've had, it feels like everybody's in agreement. So I have asked the state for that funding. So far, I've had some positive feedback from conversations at the Capitol about it. And the Forest Service has pledged to support that. TEKS has agreed to work with us every way they can to make sure that the trainer classes are a success. And so I think we have a plan. Now we just need to see if we get the funding for it or not. So just wanted to update there and ask if there's any questions related to that.
Commissioners, any questions? Thank you for moving forward with it.
All right. Thank you. The next is the LAR. Already spoke a little bit about it. We had our first budget hearing with Senate Finance on January the 27th, presented our nine exceptional items as we outlined yesterday in the workshop, and we have our House Appropriations hearing next Wednesday, February the 26th at the Capitol, which will be again presenting our exceptional items to House Appropriations. Any support that anybody could send us in that regard is greatly appreciated. As an employee of the state, I cannot and will not lobby. But I'll certainly answer any questions I may get from an elected official. So, and the third thing to bring up, we have been engaged in some, I'll say, legislative projects. There's a lot of legislation out there that could impact this agency moving forward. There seems to be an unusual uptick in the focus on fire marshals and how they do their jobs and what it takes to be able to do that. So at the request of one senator during the finance hearing, he requested a meeting to talk about a concern he had. I invited and lassoed the executive director at TCOL to go with me, because based on the conversation, this was not a TCFP issue. It was a law enforcement matter. Together, we met with the senator and his staff, and we've had additional meetings since then to try to work through some legislation to clean that up for him. There are some other bills like that. Obviously, yesterday morning we had our consortium meeting. That's where all the fire service groups sit down and discuss all the legislative issues out there facing the fire service, and those conversations continue. I can tell you that consortium, we meet monthly during the session, and it is extremely beneficial to have those conversations with the SFFMA, the State Association of Firefighters, the Fire Chief, Safety, everybody involved, Fire Marshals Association. Another very good meeting yesterday, and happy to report it appears we're all working together continually to try to make the fire service better and answer the request of the legislators.
I want to just go on the record and say I participate with as many of those as I can, and it's so nice to see the silos broken down and everybody coming to the table at the same time. It's made a huge impact, so I'm thankful for everybody that participates with those.
Thank you. The last thing I have, just a reminder, we're kicking off our regional meeting tour of Texas for 25. The first meeting is next Tuesday, February 25th. We'll be in Hallsville in conjunction with the Texas Association or Texas Fire Chiefs Association regional meeting. March the 18th, we'll be in El Paso. I encourage all of you to come join us. Beautiful place to visit in spring. We'll be in Brownsville on April the 2nd. We'll be in Kingsville on April the 3rd. Those are the only regional meetings between now and your next commission meeting. So I'll remind you of the future dates at the next meeting. Any questions for me on anything under A that we talked about?
Commissioners, any questions? Okay. We will move to 8B. I'm sorry, 13B.
13B. Happy to report, due to the phenomenal staff that we have, in particular in compliance and executive offices, we again have had no contested cases. We do a lot of conversations and educational visits with a lot of departments on issues, and they get resolved before we ever reach this point. So we're continuing that success. On 13C, within your notebook, you had reports from each of these four divisions, and I'm happy to entertain any questions there. I don't want to rehash those reports as you read them.
Commissioners, any questions on 13C?
That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. We will move to item 14.
Discussion on future meeting dates.
Commissioners, I believe our next commission meeting is scheduled for Thursday, May the 15th. That will be a 10 a.m. start time. Hope to see everyone here. Any other items or issues with that day? Okay, we'll move to item 15.
Subjects for future commission meeting agendas.
Commissioners, anything for this? Seeing none, we'll move to item 16.
Personnel matters regarding the appointment, employment, compensation, evaluation, reassignment, and duties of the agency chief.
Anything, commissioners?
Excuse me. I think we have someone for item 15.
Okay.
Sorry.
What?
Maybe the 14th. Okay. We already have that down.
I'm 15. We're going back to 15.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Veteran Bordeaux, and I represent Houston Community College Fire Academy program.
My name is Jessica Sneen. I am also with Houston Community College, but I work with the 911 Dispatch Academy and part-time with ESC 100 Fort Bend, Harris County, Westcom.
So, commissioners, we are here today to pitch a proposal to the commissioner board in regard to 911 dispatch. As you are aware, in the state of Texas, TECO regulates the law enforcement component of 911 dispatch. However, the 911 dispatch is not only law enforcement, but it's also fire and EMS. ACC, we have developed a 911 dispatch curriculum program where we teach law enforcement, fire, and EMS. Ms. Jessica Sneed, she's the, what's the proper word I wanna use? She's the expert when it comes to developing the curriculum and everything for, and I'm gonna let her speak about that. But what we are here today is to see if the 911 dispatch program the curriculum that needs to be developed in the state of Texas for the fire and EMS component, because there's currently no certification and no standard, no curriculum standard for 911. We need to see if we can have TCFP regulate the fire and EMS component and develop, and we're willing to work with the curriculum and training committee as well to develop a curriculum, which we have. Let me pass these out. so that we can make sure that the curriculum is not only a standard-based curriculum for Texas, but also a certification that goes along with the curriculum. And at this time, I'm going to turn this over to Ms. Jessica Sneed while I pass these out.
So, good morning, and my name is Jessica. I am currently pretty much the program director for the 911 Dispatch Academy with Houston Community College. I have been dispatching for close to 10 years now. I was told this morning that I was presenting this program to you guys, so I kind of scribbled some notes so I don't look crazy, right? So we are a 10-week program, and we are geared more towards police dispatching because in the state of Texas, we are licensed by TCO. That is a requirement for all dispatchers. In our course, though, we have made it to where the curriculum is. It begins with a foundation of what we do as dispatchers for police, fire, and EMS. I did have that added in because fire and EMS is an important component because many agencies do have dispatchers that provide that service. Then we go into TCOL's portion, which is the licensing course. We have CPR certification and then an additional certification that we are required to have to do our job. As I stated earlier, our academy is geared towards police dispatching, but the two classes that we do offer so that our students are well-rounded are fire emergency services and emergency medical dispatch, so that they have that foundation to be able to take into their future workplaces. Why I'm really here is to see about that certification, as Mr. Bortle had talked about. There are no certifications that are required statewide similar to TCO's licensing standard. And so a lot of agencies, you'll get some that everyone's doing something different. There is no foundation for that particular training. Some agencies may have a protocol. Some agencies do not, depending on budget, size of the agency, things of that nature. Most of my career, I've worked at agencies. I've only worked at three. Two of those three agencies did have protocols. That was the foundation. Calls were received, information was retrieved, and that information was provided to our first responders with a proper response. I did work for one small agency that did not have a protocol, and I was the supervisor of that particular agency. And upon first arriving, you know, I kind of observed the dispatchers and how they took their calls. And when it came to their medical and fire calls, it kind of had me step aside, kind of mind blown, to be honest. I listened to calls being taken for medical services, seizure calls, where the dispatcher, because there is no protocol, would have an active patient seizing, and they would just say, okay, the medic's on the way, and hang up. I don't think that is right and proper because we are able to provide pre-arrival instructions and keep these callers on the line to provide medical care until our first responders arrive. On the flip side, just like on the fire side, I've seen that particular agency take a fire alarm call because they heard the fire alarm in the call, drop it as a fire alarm, and so then the volunteer agency there sends one unit and they get there and it's a structure fire. They were able to ask the questions of why this fire alarm may be going off to determine that this is probably a fire. Fire alarm, they heard it, dropped the call, and then that was it. So my question and my goal in this is to see how we can standardize fire EMS training similar to how we standardize police training. And that is my spiel. Thank you.
Commissioners, questions?
Yes.
I don't have any questions. I have a comment.
Yes.
I work in large metropolitan departments where fire and police have separate dispatch. Usually EMS is embedded in the fire side, and I've worked in mid-sized departments where law handled all of it. And it was always a secondary function for the fire and the EMS side rather than a principal function. And I would very much like to at least have the discussion about considering this, because this is something that, one, it would credential the people who are working on the law, so the law, the fire side, and the EMS side. And I think that would enhance the delivery of services.
And we definitely feel that having that standard as well as a certification would benefit the great state of Texas, the citizens, as well as public safety.
I would make a motion to put it on the agenda.
Okay. I have a motion by Commissioner Coatney, second by Commissioner Vandegrift, that we put this on the agenda for our next meeting in May.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Any other discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? The motion passes. Thank you for that presentation.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll move on to item 16. So did we do where we get through that one? And there wasn't anything? Silence? Okay, we're at item 17.
I'm sorry.
We do have one thing. I'm sorry, Commissioner Glenn.
I know we're right here at the very end, but if you just indulge me for just one moment, I'd appreciate it. On January 24th, the Burleson Fire Department, along with a great partnership between the Fort Worth Fire Department and Burleson with an automatic aid system that we have established there, responded to three workers that were at the top of a cell phone tower. They were, the way I understand it, they were doing some work on that tower. One of the colleagues was came into contact with a high voltage line. Two of the workers were able to get down, as far as I understand it. One was critically injured, and so Fort Worth and Burleson sent up in a joint effort a team. Set up the system, got up there, worked with Encore to get the power shut off. But we have from Burleson Fire Department, Chief Lozier, Jeremiah Lozier, Assistant Chief Lozier, has the Battalion Chief, Dwayne Wines, and it's very fitting that he's the Battalion Chief over the Training Division, but he was one that went up and conducted that rescue and got that critically injured employee for the cell phone, over that cell phone tower down 150 feet in the air. And they performed a tremendous rescue, a very complex high-angle rescue, and Chief Wines is here today. So very well done. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for sharing that. Okay, item 17.
Adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Motion by Commissioner Glenn. Second by Commissioner Hamilton. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion carries. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here with us today. Enjoy the rest of your day.